Little children, keep yourselves from idols. Clint just read from 1 John 5. And when we think of idols, we may think of figurines or statues. And perhaps this was really what was in the mind of Moses when God instructed him to speak to the children of Israel. I want to read from Deuteronomy chapter 4. Therefore, watch yourselves very carefully, so that you do not become corrupt and make for yourselves an idol, an image of any shape, whether formed like a man or a woman or like any animal on earth or any bird that flies in the air or like any creature that moves along the ground or any fish in the waters below. And when you look up to the sky and see the sun, the moon, the stars, all the heavenly array, do not be enticed into bowing down to them and worshiping the things the Lord your God has apportioned to all the nations under heaven. Deuteronomy is a repeating of the law of Moses to the children of Israel before they cross over the Jordan into the promised land. And so here God, through Moses, is reminding them again, because he knows that in Canaan there's going to be the Canaanites worshiping their false gods. And they may be statues or figurines or maybe even the sun, moon, and stars. But he's saying, don't be enticed, don't be tempted to worship these things that God has made. And it's a reminder to them to always worship the one true living God of Israel and not to be lured into idolatry. And yes, golden calves, cedar poles, statues, the moon, the sun, the things that the Canaanites worshiped may have been tempting for the Israelites to engage in, and they struggled with it. And those things sound irrelevant and even silly to us today. But do we dare say that we don't have a problem with idolatry? It all depends on how we define idolatry. And notice some definitions. Someone said idolatry is making a good thing an ultimate thing. Idolatry is taking something, anything, and making it more important than it should be in our lives. With that definition, can we more readily see idolatry even in our society, but even in our own lives? A.B. Simpson said, as long as you want anything very much, especially more than you want God, it's an idol. But here's one of my favorite definitions. Timothy Keller, in his book, Counterfeit Gods, defines idolatry with these words. An idol is whatever you look at and say in your heart of hearts, if I have that, then I'll feel my life has meaning, and I'll know I'll have value. Then I'll feel significant and secure. Examine that statement for a moment. Idolatry is anything that we look at and say, if I have that, then I'll be fulfilled, I'll be happy, I'll be significant. Using these definitions and being honest, do we have idols in our lives? At one point, or perhaps currently, we think, well, if I just had that car, then I'd be happy. Or maybe it's if I had that girl for a girlfriend, or ladies saying that boy for a boyfriend, or if I was just married, or if I just had this particular job or was able to have this title, then I would feel significant, secure. I would feel valuable. If I just had a certain amount of money in the bank, if I could just go on this perfect vacation, then I would be happy and content. But you fill in the blank. If only I had this, I would be happy and fulfilled. Do we recognize that how we fill in that blank can easily become idolatry to us? There was a man I read about that visited a remote, impoverished village in India. Could easily have gone to Rayali, India. And there, this man saw a woman sacrificing a chicken as an act of worship to her God. And he was amazed that in today's society, in today's world, in this 21st century, how could there be someone who would still offer a chicken as a sacrifice to his or her God? The man struck up a conversation with the woman, and he was impressed with her. She was well-spoken. She was very kind, very, very, very educated. And in the course of conversation with her, he learned that she had visited New York City some 3 years before. And so this man, an American, asked her, "Tell me what you think about America. What were your impressions?" And she said, "I hated it. I hated it." And he asked, "Well, why?" And she said, this is her answer, she had never seen more idolatry anywhere in her entire life. And when the man kept pressing her, "Well, what idolatry, what forms of idolatry did you see?" He kept pressing her. She finally said, "Okay, here are three forms of idolatry that were very apparent to me. Number one," she said, "not so gently, Americans worship their stomachs." Her eyes were wide as she talked. This woman from a simple village in India described the massive stores overstocked with food to sell to people who had already too much to eat. And this woman was so offended by people who were overweight when so many people in her village were going hungry. "Americans worship their stomachs," she said. She described, secondly, how Americans worship television. From her perspective, they design their homes around the television. They take the most important room in the house and the most important place, and the furniture is arranged not for people to talk to one another, but so that everybody can see the television. And it was almost too much for her to comprehend that some people even allow a television in their bedrooms, of all places. And thirdly, she said, Americans worship their phones. She said it was the worst form of idolatry, the relationship that people have with their phones. She was deeply offended that people use them while driving. Even worse was that no one, at least in her experience, could have a full conversation without reading something on their phone. And I've been expecting someone to text me right now. But that's what she saw. People worshiping their phone. They're always consulting their idol, if you will. And she was appalled. This woman who had just sacrificed a chicken to her God said, "America is steeped in idolatry." And here's this American asking her and prodding her, questioning her, "What did you see? What idolatry did you see?" And when she's through, could he argue with her? Not at all. But I wonder if this woman saw us, examined our lives for a day, what would she say you and I worship? Are we placing too much value on things that are not that important? Are we bowing down and worshiping something besides God? Have we fallen into a new dimension of idolatry? I want to give you an example of modern day idolatry. And it goes along with what this woman from India observed. There's a phenomenon known as nomophobia. Nomophobia. And simply, that is a phrase that was coined back in 2010 of a phobia of no mobile phone phobia. It's either something happening to your phone so that you can't have it, or you're in a place out in the country where you have no reception and you don't have access to your phone, service to your phone. It's a condition that is becoming rampant. In fact, where this word was coined was in Britain, and they did a study. By the way, the gentleman that came up with this term, nomophobia, observed something when he was eating with his friends, that it was difficult to have a conversation with his friends because everyone kept looking at their phones. Nomophobia became the term. And they did a study, and they found at that time nearly 53% of mobile phone users in Britain tend to be anxious when they lose their mobile phone, run out of battery or credit, or have no network coverage. Now, what do you think would be the percentages in the U.S.? Here are some from studies done. 65% sleep with or next to their smartphones. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'd have to raise mine first. It's right there. Right there. 1 in 5 people would rather go without shoes for a week than take a break from their phone. More than half never switch off their phone. If it's on the charger, it's on. Studies show that a full 66% of all adults suffer from nomophobia. Other signs of nomophobia: obsessively checking missed texts and calls. I've got a visual. I should show this to you sometime. It's the movie Up. You familiar with the movie Up? Do you remember the dog in the movie? The dog is able to talk. Okay, this is an animated cartoon, yes. But the dog is able to talk. But all of a sudden, in the middle of his conversation, he'll point and say, "Squirrel." And he'll do it at the odd times. But he just gets so distracted if he thinks there's a squirrel in the area. And to me, we must look like that. When we're trying to carry on a conversation and we hear a ding or a whistle and we... Squirrel? No. We check to see, what was that text? What was that email that's so important that I'm going to interrupt this conversation that I'm having with the person right in front of me? So obsessively checking missed texts and calls, using phones at inappropriate times, taking the phone into the restroom with you. You're laughing, but you know you do it. You know you do it. Missing opportunities for face-to-face interaction, preferring over-the-phone contact instead of face-to-face. Talk to that person? Are you kidding me? Text them? I'll do that all day long, but you actually want me to say something? Is that the world we're living in? There are physical side effects to folks stricken with nomophobia. Symptoms such as panic attacks, shortness of breath, dizziness, trembling, sweating, accelerated heart rate, chest pain, or nausea. And you say, "You got to be kidding." No, I'm not. It can become an idol, quite frankly, if we're honest. And what does God say about idolatry? God said this in the Old Covenant: "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I am the Lord your God, am a jealous God." You shall have no other gods before me. That's still true, folks. We were created to know God, to love Him, to worship Him, to do life with Him. That's why we must guard the affections of our souls and always put Him first. Jesus, when asked, said the greatest commandment, the first and foremost commandment, is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. That's putting Him first, isn't it? Idolatry is allowing anything to interfere with that relationship with God. You see, our souls can be seduced. We can be distracted. The pollution of the world can poison our relationship with God. Whether it be money or things or friends or likes or followers or whatever we think will make us happy, those things do not make us happy. Anytime we allow our souls to be consumed with anything other than God, we'll never be satisfied. So what is that idol in our lives? Is it money? Is it things? Is it our cell phone? A preacher met with 24 young adults who readily admitted they were addicted to their online world. These 24 young adults were very active in the church where he preached, very, very active, known for being spiritual leaders among their peers. But every single one of them admitted two things. Number one, they have an unhealthy addiction to social media or technology that they've been unable or unwilling to admit for some time. And number two, listen carefully, they feel they had lost passion for God because they are distracted by their passion for social media and technology. Because they were so wrapped up in those things, it affected their relationship with God. If you're checking multiple times a day to see what people are saying about you, let's call it what it is. It's idolatry. If your identity comes from who follows you, who likes you, what they say and what they think about you more than what God says about you, it's idolatry. If every time your phone buzzes, beeps, or dings, and you're drawn by some seemingly unstoppable force, reminds me of Star Wars, that can be a sign that that phone is too much of a force in your life. Many are obsessed with social media and technology. It's distracting them from God. Do you think more about what God says in His Word or what people say on your news feed? How much time do you think about God versus what you want to say online? Have you made a good thing into a supreme thing? Listen to Psalm 24. Who may ascend the hill of the Lord? Who may stand in His holy place? And the psalmist answers those questions. He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to an idol or swear by what is false. I want to highlight that phrase, who does not lift up his soul to an idol. Is it possible that we've lifted up our souls to an online idol? Tim Elmore is the speaker for tonight's parenting seminar hosted at Regency Church. I want to share some things he has written about this very matter. Here's a quote from him. Outside of food, water, and shelter, I guard myself against subjection to any addiction that begins to dictate my behavior. This includes technology. I recognize that cell phones, tablets, computers, and other technology introduced in the future will make my life easier and enable me to work more efficiently. My principle, though, is this. Technology should be a servant, not a master. Technology should be a servant, not a master. And to those who may struggle with this, whether it's a master or a servant, he suggests this balanced approach. Number one, be sure there are daily times you turn off the cell phone and experience either face-to-face conversations or solitude. Number two, balance screen time and in-person time each week. For every hour you invest in front of a screen, you invest in human contact. Number three, try a technology fast every month. Food is not the only thing from which to fast. Try a technology fast every month where you actually go for a day or more without a computer, tablet, or phone. You'll feel liberated. Number four, place your phone at least 15 feet away from you when you sleep at night. He adds this addendum, I realize you'll have to get up to push snooze, but it's safer that way. And number five, block your day in time zones where you spend time using technology, but also have blocks of time for organic, genuine interaction with people. And some of you may not be able to relate to what we've just discussed. But in my estimation, This is the world in which we live. And many of you can identify fully with what we're talking about. We've zeroed in on just some forms of idolatry. But there are many others. And I think that woman from India is right. We live in an idolatrous society. Now think about the words of William Cowper. The dearest idol I have known, whate'er that idol be, help me to tear it from thy throne and worship only thee. Jesus encountered a young man who's very wealthy. And listen to Mark's account as Jesus observed this young man, this young rich man who idolized his money. Mark says, then Jesus, looking at him, loved him. I want to underscore that. He looked at this young rich man and he loved him. And he said to him, one thing you lack. Go your way, sell whatever you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Come, take up the cross and follow me. You test this. But I believe this is the only time in the gospel accounts that Jesus ever told someone to sell what he had, give it to the poor, take up his cross and follow him. Why did Jesus say it to this particular young man and not to anyone else? And the answer is because for that young man, money, wealth, was his idol. And he needed to tear that idol out of his heart. It wasn't because God doesn't want him, doesn't want us to have money and things. He just doesn't want money and things to have us. He doesn't want us to be consumed with something that's going to distract us from the most important relationships in our lives. Number one, our relationship with him. And number two, our relationship with family and friends and church. He doesn't want anything to hinder those relationships. And without a question, the things of this world had this rich man's heart. They consumed him. He'd been seduced. But Jesus loved him. And he wanted him to have something better. So he commanded him to get rid of his idols and follow him. You see, when Jesus looks at us, he loves us. He loves us so much that he wants to convict us of any idols that we have in our hearts. As painful as it may be, or as resistant as we are to it, he loves us so much he wants us to be face to face with our idolatry and to recognize if we're going to put him first, there's some changes that we're going to have to make. Folks, you weren't made for Twitter. You weren't made to get likes on Instagram. You weren't made for idolatry. You were made to love God, to live for him. And if you settle for anything less than living for him, then you've been seduced. God has something better. But it's time to tear down the idols, thirst for his presence, long for him, pursue that relationship that Jesus has made possible. Then our souls will be satisfied. Perhaps there's some of us need to tear our idols down. We need to humble ourselves and even respond to the one who gave his son for us so that we might live. If you're ready to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ this morning, to put him first by putting him on in baptism so that your sins can be washed away, we hope and pray you'll do that even today. If you need the prayers of the church on your behalf, there's so many things, so many people we've been praying for. But if you desire the prayers of the church to help you with your idolatry or to help you with some struggle that you're having, your church family wants to pray with you and for you. Won't you come right now as we stand and sing?